Good morning. It's good to be here in God's house again. Good to see each one of you here. Some of you regular here, some of you maybe not so regular. Welcome, each one. And I trust that together we can worship our great God. Great is the Lord and greatly to be praised. Is that the preschool verse, I believe? That's the God we're here to worship. Do we keep that in mind as we enter into the worship, the greatness of our God? More greater than we can wrap our minds around. It's good to be here, and for what we have already taken in. Thanks, Nelson, for that report. I would say it was well done and represented well our time there. We'll confess that is somewhat a scary prospect to me, as I'm sure it is to many of you. But, you know, if God is with us, we can go with confidence, right? Endeavoring to continue on with Him, change is inevitable, right? And but if God is there, we can have confidence in that. Thanks, Willie, for those devotional thoughts. I really appreciated that. Some of those Independence Day musings. God's looking for unconventional thinkers, is that what you would say? You know, he calls us to things that, you know, we need to think outside the box a little bit. Independent thinkers, right? And I really appreciated those examples of people that were, you know, in called out of their comfort zone, so to speak. Abraham, Joseph, Ruth, and some of them. Really enjoyed that. I had considered maybe sharing something along the lines of the holiday. Decided not to, and thanks for polishing that subject off well. I have chosen to continue on our study in the Sermon on the Mount, and specifically the Beatitudes. I'm not planning to spend much time there, but if you care to, turn there. It's Matthew 5. I think we know most of these by memory, probably. Matthew 5, verse 9 is the one I've chosen to look at today. And if you are alert and paying attention and have been here all along, you take note that I haven't been taking them in order always, and that is the case here with this. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. For they shall be called the children of God. I was thinking something about that title that Jesus gives the peacemakers. Now, we are used to titles somewhat. We looked at some titles of Jesus today in our adult lesson. I believe that it was, I am the resurrection and the life. The two titles that belong to Jesus, and there's many of them that fit Jesus. Maybe along the thought of the peacemakers, Jesus is the Prince of Peace. It's a title that he has been given in the Word. And you know, maybe there's titles that people today, people have with their name. Maybe it's a PhD or an MD. I don't know if any of that applies to us here or not. Or maybe a simple description, you know, like grandpa or great uncle, maybe more general. You know, occupation-wise, a farmer, trucker, manager, computer geek, don't know what all you want to put in there, shed hauler, mechanic. You know, there's titles, there's descriptions that go along with people. Maybe we identify with Cornerstone or PMC or DMC, Daystar, whatever. And, you know, I don't know what all, maybe most of the, you know, titles don't really mean all that much to us. We don't have a lot of, you know, letters in front of our name and so on. You know, I hope this title, this one here, is at the top of the list, is one that we all really care about, one that outshines any other ambitions that we might have in, that you and I can have in life, that we could be called God's children, that we could be called the children of God. And I thought, just maybe an interesting side note, if you want some letters to put with your name, how about COD, Child of God? Okay, so much for that. But as a Christian, well, I trust that I'm speaking to Christians, that this is what we desire, to be called God's children, to copy Jesus Christ in all we do. Well, what is a peacemaker? You know, this is what we are to be if we would indeed live up to being children of God. Are you, am I, this kind of person? I believe this is the only place in our King James Bible that we find this word, peacemakers. And it means just what I think we think it means, which is peaceable. That's the word that we find for peacemakers there. If you look it up in Strong's, that word is peaceable is there. Maybe if you want some dictionary definitions of, you know, modern definitions, a person who settles an argument or stops a fight. Another one that I like is one who makes peace, especially by reconciling parties at variance. Also, I like the way one commentary, I forget which one it was, put it. It says, the peacemaker is one who is actively trying to reconcile people to God and to one another. I like that way of putting it. You know, there is quite a bit of emphasis, there has been, in our world on peace today and for many years. You know, a lot of people across the globe are concerned about this subject. They're concerned about peace. There's peace movements. They want, you know, they want the war in Ukraine to stop. They want the war in Israel to stop. They organize events and campaign for peace. They want a world where everyone gets along. Then there's no fighting. Well, it sounds really good. Should we as Anabaptist people be joining up with these kind of movements to try to affect world peace? Not going to spend a lot of time with that, but consider how well are those movements working. You know, those kinds of organizations have been going for many years now. I didn't do a lot of research, but the little bit I did, you know, way back to the Vietnam War, at least, those peace movements. And you know, the United Nations, they have what they call peacekeeping forces. Kind of ironic when you think about it. Peacekeeping forces, I think they have guns and would use them. It's kind of ironic. But they're deployed around the world you know, where there's unrest, where there's civil war and some of that. Well, are these methods of peacekeeping the solution to bringing the world to peace? I think we know the answer this morning. And without discrediting some of these organizations, I don't know much about them. There may be good they do. I think we would all agree that, you know, there's more unrest in our world than probably ever, despite these efforts. And, you know, really the problem of unrest and fighting is not solved by outward means or force. You know, it's only when men have hearts changed by Jesus Christ, the one who is the Prince of Peace, it's only then that real peace is found. And you know, the reality is that in this old world that we're in, there will be unrest because of carnal man. And Jesus said, in the last days, there will be wars and rumors of wars. We can expect those things. John 16:33, he says, "These things have I spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world." Right there, Jesus said quite plainly, we're going to have hard times. We're going to have tribulation in the world. And I believe the peace that we are called to as Christians is different than can be affected by any earthly peace movement. It's a peace that is not the absence of conflict. See, that's what those peace movements are promoting, right? No conflict, get rid of it. Not the absence of conflict, but a peace in spite of the conflict. Okay. Well, a question that came to me as I thought about our call to be peacemakers, you know, and the fruit of the Spirit is peace is one of the fruit of the Spirit that we are to have in our lives, coming from our lives. Question that came to me, you know, how do we reconcile the fact that Jesus, the Prince of Peace, and along with his call for us to be peaceable, how do we reconcile that with the words we find in Matthew 10, Jesus' own words, where he says, "Think not that I am come to send peace on the earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. For I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's foes shall be they of his own household." How do we reconcile that? And there's similar verses, the same in the Gospel of Luke. How do we reconcile this seeming conflict? Well, Jesus' kingdom is a kingdom of peace. But you know, it's rather the response of the carnal heart to what Jesus calls to, the response that the carnal heart has to the way of Jesus, that's what brings about the strife. And that's what brings about the conflict between families and people. The way of Jesus Christ and the kingdom and the way of the other kingdom is at odds. They will always be. They will never agree. The two are going to clash. And while it's Jesus' teachings that bring about the conflict, so to speak, it's really the carnal heart in life, in rebellion to that, that makes the conflict. Blessed are the peacemakers. I wonder what Bible character you think of when you think of a peacemaker. I don't know that I'll open it up, take the time to see what goes through your minds. But my mind, the one I just go to right away, is Isaac, there in the Old Testament. Katie, you look like you have a suggestion. Abraham. Very good. Yep. There is many that I believe that we have. I thought I'd read this account, the account of Isaac that we have in Genesis 26, a few verses there. Not planning to spend a lot of time here, but I would like to just read this. Isaac was a peacemaker. Genesis 26, let's start reading at verse 18. Jumping into the story here. And Isaac digged again the wells of water which they had digged in the days of Abraham his father. For the Philistines had stopped them after the death of Abraham. And he called their names after the names by which his father had called them. And Isaac's servants digged in the valley and found there a well of springing water. And the herdsmen of Gerar did strive with Isaac's herdsmen, saying, "The water is ours." And he called the name of the well Ezek, because they strove with him. And they digged another well and strove for that also. And he called the name of it Sitnah. And he removed from thence and digged another well. And for that they strove not. And he called the name of it Rehoboth. And he said, "For now the Lord hath made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land." Very short story. Isaac was a peacemaker. You know, his father, maybe he had helped. Imagine he might have helped dig these wells with his father back when he was a young man. These were his dad's wells. They had been filled in. And here he comes along, and let's get these wells back up and working. And I don't know how deep these wells were or the amount of time and effort that it took, but I don't picture this to be an easy project or very, very, very simple project. Maybe him and his servants spent days, maybe weeks, I'm not sure, of hard work to dig these wells. And these other herdsmen come along and say, "No, this is ours. You move along. This is our well." And it didn't happen once. It happened a second time. And they moved along. And finally, on the third one, they had a well that they could peaceably have. Like I said, there's other examples we have of peacemakers. Another one I thought of, yeah, I appreciate that one of Abraham in the choice with Lot there. He could have said, "Lot, this is how it's going to be. You go over there and I'll go over here." But no, he gave Lot the choice and lived with that choice. I thought of another one I thought of is Abigail. And we're not going to spend a lot of time with these, but remember that story, how there was conflict with Nabal and David. And you know, she could have said, "I'm out of here. This is a good time to take a vacation. I'm gone." But no, she got herself in the middle of what could have been, you know, a really bad situation. She came forward and tried to make peace. I thought of another one. I didn't research it much. It's maybe more of an obscure Bible character, maybe. It is Barnabas that we have in the New Testament. And there's several accounts I had considered looking at those accounts this morning instead of the one I did. He was one that I believe it was when Paul, which had been Saul had been persecuting the church, and is it Antioch? I can't remember the city. I might have that wrong. But he had found the Lord, and he came back to Jerusalem, and he entered right in, you know, at the church there, and people were like, whoa, you know, not this man in our church, no. You know, there probably was relatives that had lost their lives or were in prison because of this man. And there were some feelings there. And Barnabas took him and said, no, look, Paul, I believe his name was changed at that point. Paul's a brother now. And explained to them. And he was a mediator, could you say, between in the whole thing. Also, later on, when there was that conflict between, it was Paul and Barnabas and John Mark, and you know, Paul was one. You know, John Mark, he left us on the trip. No, he's not going along. And Barnabas was one that could see, you know, let's give this young man another chance, was a bit of a mediator in that way, again, I believe. Well, moving on, you know, thinking about this account, like I said, we're not going to spend much time with it, but we have these circumstances in life. Sooner or later, if you haven't, you will. As somebody takes advantage of me, you know, what are we going to do when that person takes my well, so to speak? We have a choice. What are we going to do with that? And it's pretty easy to get defensive. This is my well. I dug it. It belongs to me. Or we can be a peacemaker and move on. All right. Some thoughts on, and these are, I feel, a little random, but some thoughts on peace and being a peacemaker. First of all, you know, I need to have this peace of God in my own heart to be an effective peacemaker. You know, there is a peace that, like I mentioned, those peacekeeping movements can't give. There's a peace that we can only have through salvation in Jesus Christ. It's assurance that, you know, Jesus' blood atoned for my sin. I'm free. I'm in a right standing with the Lord God, the Creator. And no matter what comes, whatever He allows in my life, whether I live or die, I belong to God. I'm the Lord's. And there's a tremendous peace there that we can have that we can't otherwise have outside of the blood of Jesus Christ. You know, there is fear in the heart of the sinner. It's not a good life. If you have been there, you know what I'm saying. There's fear there. There's no peace. That's what the Bible tells us. There's no peace that the wicked have. You know, they're fearful of death. They're fearful of what might happen tomorrow. They're fearful of meeting God. This morning, if you find yourself, if you know you're not right with God, don't wait. Don't push it off. It's a terrible place to be. It's a terrible way to live. There's only peace that we find through Jesus Christ. Now, do Christians struggle with peace sometimes? Do we face worry? Well, sure we do. But you know, we have a God we can take that to. Philippians 4, verse 7. And the peace of God which passeth all understanding shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Okay, so I need peace in my own heart, first of all, to be an effective peacemaker. It's going to be very difficult to be a peacemaking kind of person if I'm not at peace with myself, if I'm not at peace with God and where God has me in life and the circumstances He has put in my life. Secondly, I had simply that peacemaking is not passive. You know, maybe that's how we tend to look at peacemaking, being a peacemaker. That is a passive thing. It's just not doing anything. Just letting people run over you, being just kind of, you know, a mild person. Is that how Isaac was here? Just passive, just let those people push him around. Well, yes, maybe it is being kind of mild sometimes. And yes, it does let people run over you sometimes. But you know, peacemaking is a very intentional thing. It calls us to action, I believe, above what we would normally want to do, which of course is, you know, standing up for me, not letting people run over me. Show them I'm not going to be pushed around, and so on. Peacemaking is an active thing. Psalm 34, 14b, it says, "Seek peace and pursue it." That doesn't sound very passive. That sounds like it takes a decision and energy to follow through with that decision. Okay, thirdly, I have peacemaking does not compromise truth. You know, there's always a temptation, right, to make a compromise to keep peace. And you know, that's where I believe it becomes more of a matter of peacekeeping than peacemaking. You know, that keeping the peace, avoiding the conflict, is more important than doing or saying the right thing. But a true peacemaker, my friends, will not compromise on truth. Tell the truth. Say it how it really is. You know, not beating around the bush. Even when you know there's going to be consequences. It's going to bring about a conflict. And you know, many a Christian has suffered, and many still do today, because of not making a compromise simply for the sake of peace. Not making a compromise. Blessed are the peacemakers. In Matthew Henry commentary, he says, "And if the peacemakers are blessed, woe to the peace breakers." Here in the last part, I was thinking, you know, what are some verses that apply to being peacemakers, and maybe especially as it relates to peace in our brotherhoods. Also, and the same would go for, you know, our homes and marriages, all the relationships that you could say that are close knit. See, those are the ones that the evil one loves to destroy, to bring unrest and distrust in. Satan is the destroyer of peace, my friends. And our Mennonite brotherhoods are not exempt from attack. And quite frankly, I think if we would honestly just say it, we haven't always been the example of peace as we should. You know, the Church of Christ is to be known by the love that's there. That's what people are to see. "By this shall all men know that you're my disciples, if you have love one to another," Jesus said. There's peace there. That's the mark of Christ's church. The question I brought to myself, you know, is how do I promote peace in my brotherhood? Is that a high priority to me? As I was thinking about that, in Proverbs 6, we find a list of things that the Lord hates. And right in there, in that list, top six things, I believe is how I would see that, is "he that soweth discord among brethren." You know, it's a big deal. It's a big deal to God. You know, if there's unity or if there's a lack of it in his church. And, you know, do I see that sowing discord as that serious. One of the things God hates. We maybe don't normally talk much about that. You know, am I careful about what I say? Especially when talking about one of my brothers or sisters in the church. There's an interesting proverb, Proverbs 17:14, and I'll read it in the Amplified because I think it makes it a little clearer. It says, "The beginning of strife is as when water first trickles from a crack in a dam. Therefore, stop contention before it gets worse and quarreling breaks out." You know, the thought is here that, you know, strife starts in a small way with something minute, just like a little erosion going across a dam. It just keeps wearing away and it gets bigger and bigger, and eventually the whole dam is just gone, just washed away. That's how strife can start, my friends, in a brotherhood. And I couldn't help but think of a story. I think it was from a literature book in school, and I would have loved to get my hands on it. Maybe some of you have, I'm guessing some of you have had that same story in your experience, maybe in school. So I'll just simply give it as I remember, and it was a long story. What I'm going to share is not going to be very long. But there was two families, as I recall, and that lived close together, across the road from each other. I believe it was a farming community. They had farms. I think, I'm not 100% sure, I think it was more Europe, maybe Russia. I'm not totally sure on that. But they lived just across the road, and they were they were families that were always doing stuff together. Best friends. You know, they helped each other with harvest in the busy times, and they were just the best of friends. They were always, you know, they were right there across the street. They were always doing things together. Until one day, I don't remember the detail, but if I recall right, it was it might have been a servant or a wife. I cannot get that straight, but there was, and what the details were, but she went over to the other property. There was a hen that laid eggs or something over there, and she said, "Oh, you know, okay, those are ours. I'll bring them back." And someone from the other household, "You're taking eggs from our property? What's going on here?" You know, it was such a minute thing, but there was words exchanged, and you know, if they would have left it at that, I think it would have cleared up and would have been fine. But it kept growing. And they both went home and they were talking about it, and this thing just snowballed until the husbands got involved, the children, and just, you know, they went from being best friends to the worst of enemies. Could not say one nice thing to each other. It was terrible. And till the end of the story, I forget the details, but One place got set on fire because they were getting even for one thing or another. And I don't recall for sure if both places got burnt to the ground or it spread terribly. And I can't remember if it ended on a positive note or not. I don't recall that detail. I should refresh myself if they made it right or not. But it was a disaster. All started from a little trickle of water over the dam. Best friends became the worst of worst enemies. And the same thing, I say, is possible in brotherhoods. And I don't feel like I've been around very long or have as much experience as many. But I think I can say I know what it's talking about. I've seen some of these things. Best friends can be turned apart from each other by what started as just a little trickle. So remember that verse, stop contention. Let's be peacemakers. Those little contentions can grow, probably will. Okay, another thought. I thought of Jesus and his disciples there. You know, we have a couple of different accounts of the disciples. You know, they would get to their where they were going, and Jesus said, you know, what were we talking about in the way? Oh, they were arguing over who was going to be the greatest. You know, they were thinking of Jesus taking charge of an earthly kingdom. That's what they had in mind, I believe. And who is going to be next in command? What is the great position, you know? Could I be in one of these great positions? And you know what? It always led to arguing and dispute among themselves. I believe that's what it says. They disputed among themselves. Is there a lesson for us? I believe there is. Quite simple and straightforward. A desire for recognition, power, position, whatever word you want to put in there, in our brotherhood, in the church, will wreck the peace in the brotherhood. It's just that simple. It's just that way. And this morning, Christ Church needs to be kept free of such desires. They do not fit. They do not fit the heavenly kingdom. You know, Paul was really, he was really concerned about peace in the church, I believe. And you can read there in 1 Corinthians 8, he talks about not offending a brother. And after he goes into length of explaining how, you know, meat offered to idols, which was something they had to deal with there in that time, it's okay to eat it. It's fine. An idol is nothing. It doesn't matter. And it's still good food. It's fine to eat. After that, he goes on to say, but you know what? If eating that is going to make my brother to be offended, I will not. I will not do it. And he, you know, he was ready to forbear something just fine and okay because of the simple possibility of offending a brother. You know, I'm challenged by that. And I wonder if sometimes we're not lacking in our brotherhoods, in this attitude of self-sacrifice that Paul presents to us there. You know, our American culture is self-expression. This is me, this is who I am, and the way I do things. And if you don't like it, that's your problem. It doesn't really matter what you think. And I'll just simply raise it as a question. You know, has any of this type of thinking affected our congregations, our brotherhoods? Has that been creeping in? I think if we're honest, we'd admit it has crept in. Can I just bluntly say that kind of self-expression will wreck brotherhood, will destroy the peace in brotherhood. Ephesians 4, verse 3. I want to wrap this up here. It says, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. Is that you and I? Is that myself? And on a positive note, I am glad this morning to be a part of a brotherhood of peacemakers. And I commend you for that this morning. And I can think of examples personal to some of you here where you have dug another well, so to speak, went the second mile, sacrificed, gave up what was what you would not have had to for the sake of peace. God bless you for that. You know, it takes continued work, right? None of us are perfect, and we all can continue to grow. Go back in closing here to that one definition of peacemaker. One who is actively trying to reconcile people to God and to one another. You know, this morning, that's what we need to be all about. That's what my personal life needs to be about. That's what our homes need to be about. That's what our brotherhoods need to be about. Reconciling people to God and to each other. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Let's kneel for prayer.